Hi, I'm Piper.
And I'm Erin.
Welcome to Off the Tracks podcast, where we explore what it means to do law differently. Today's episode is in partnership with Lawyers in House. Lawyers in House is comprised of a team of experienced former in-house counsel who are ready to hit the ground running to deliver world-class legal support that takes work off your plate and makes life easier along the way. Whether you're a solopreneur or a Fortune 500 company or fall anywhere in between, Lawyers in House will meet and exceed your business's needs.
Today, we are joined by Sasha Fraser. Sasha went to Queen's University and studied math. She also earned her law degree from Queen's. She lives in Toronto with her husband, two daughters, and a yellow lab. She is an avid tennis player, photographer, mixologist, and playlist curator. She has had a non-linear career with many phases, including 6 years off the legal tracks in three different business roles, before returning to law and general counsel positions at Xerox and now IBM. We are so excited to have her join us today. And if you stay tuned, you might even get a cool new cocktail recipe.
Sasha, we are so excited to have you here today. We know that you have had such a varied and really like off the tracks career in so many ways. And we would love to hear a little bit about how it's evolved over time. But if you could give us a bit of a snapshot of how it started, what was kind of the start of your legal career like? Because we will definitely get into where you are today. But how did you kick things off when you began your legal career?
First of all, Erin and Piper, I'm delighted to be here. Thanks for inviting me. How did my legal career start? It actually started by attending a career fair at Queen's University, not because I had any intentions of working over the summer, but because that's where everyone was traveling that afternoon. And because a friend of mine who was a receptionist at a law firm said, "You should stop by my firm's booth. There's a couple of fun guys there." So I ended up talking to a couple of labor lawyers from a firm called Matthews Dinsdale, and I had full expectations of lifeguarding that summer and really, you know, didn't dress up, didn't have my resume with me. And a couple days later, I received a phone call from one of the partners that was at the career fair asking me if I was interested in working that summer. And you know, through a few phone calls, it turned out I worked in a labor firm my first summer. And that was completely random. And it's not where I started practicing, but there was a love of employment law that came and endured through my career after that summer. But it really got started the second summer when I was more deliberate. And I found my way to McCarthy Tetro and became very interested in litigation and stuck around there through articling and eventually started as litigator. So that's how it all got started.
Yeah, that's amazing. And so we know your career didn't end there. You've had quite a diverse career since your days in litigation. So can you describe a bit more about what the transition to in-house was like for you and how you made that decision?
Sure. There was a long period of time at McCarthy's. It was close to 10 years and I loved it. And again, it kind of evolved. But I was there at the best of times. We did a lot of our own trial work. We learned from great lawyers like Ian Binney, did really fantastic work like publication bans, medical malpractice, commercial trials, criminal work. And it was hard to think about leaving. It was such a great time to be practicing law in litigation. And I didn't have a lot of encumbrances in my life. I was just getting married and didn't have kids. I didn't have aging parents. And I just really threw myself into it. It was a good time to be doing that. It's kind of funny how I got in-house. It's not because I was becoming a mother that I went in-house, but circumstantially things happened with my caseload and my clients that led me to go in-house. Effectively, I came back from a first maternity leave after about 9 months, and most of the files I had been working on had settled. And so my plate was very empty, and I I started walking the halls of McCarthy's looking for new work. And I was looking for some more commercial work, and I stopped into a partner's office and he said, "Well, you've worked on Xerox files before." I said, "No." And he said, "You would love the people at Xerox. They're really fun to work with. Here's two new files." And so that's really how the relationship with Xerox started. And remember, this is 1999. There was not FaceTime. You know, when you've spoken with someone on the phone and you wonder what they look like, I'm kind of dating myself here. And I wasn't that into business development, even though I should have been at that point in my career. And, you know, I said to the person I was working with, "You know, aren't you above the subway? Why don't I take the subway up and we'll have a meeting and we'll grab lunch afterwards." And, you know, off I went. And I would, you know, at this time I was starting to think about, do I want to stay in a big firm on Bay Street? I started poking around, thinking about boutiques and modest changes, but I hadn't ever thought I'd be attractive to an in-house role as a litigator. And by the end of this lunch, he was just basically saying, "Would you ever consider coming in-house? Because we're looking for someone and you seem like you'd be a really great fit." And it was at that point in time where I realized this could fit for me. And I hadn't written my resume in about 10 years and put it together and started the interview process and ended up there. Now, I got to date stamp this a little bit. When I started talking to them, I was about a few weeks back from my maternity leave. I was pregnant again within a month. And I was sort of wondering, you know, how was this going to work? And it was a long process. And they eventually hired me 6 months pregnant, which said to me a lot about the culture where I was going. And we even, you know, had to really be careful about the start dates so that I could get EI, have a brief maternity leave and really get going there. So how I got there was very, you know, circumstantial and random, but I'm so grateful because I may not have considered myself as a candidate for in-house if this hadn't happened.
Wow, Sasha, that's such an interesting story. And I think it just shows that like everybody ends up working in-house for different reasons. And regardless of the motivators for ending up in-house or the happy situations that kind of get you there, everybody that we've spoken to so far has just learned so much in their experiences. And so we'd love to know a little bit about what you really enjoy most about the different in-house roles you've held, because we know that you, as mentioned, previously worked at Xerox and now you're at IBM. And obviously those are two different companies with two different goals. And so what sort of was the transition like when you moved from Xerox to IBM? And what are some of the things that you've, you know, really most enjoyed along the way?
I have to unpack that a little bit. First of all, you know, when you first start in-house, the things you enjoy the most are the things you don't have to do anymore. So the idea of not docketing, the idea of not business developing, those are all very attractive when you first make the transition. But as you get going, what becomes really exciting is being integrated with the business and being part of something enduring, and watching the business you work for evolve and being part of teams. And as you become more senior, being part of executive teams is really exciting. So, and it's fun. It's fun. I remember, you know, early days at Xerox, I settled a case and a vice president came and gave me a gift certificate at Pottery Barn. It's like, this would never happen at a law firm. And he said, "Well, make sure you do something with it. Like, don't pay your hydro bill, like do something you'll always remember." And at that time, my kids were very young, and I went out and I bought them two little touch lamps for their bedside tables. And, you know, to this day, when we go in, I think, well, that was my first sort of bonus from working in a different culture than a law firm. And I remember a couple of years in, one of my clients said, you know, we're having a conference in Vegas. If you can think of a good topic, we'd love to fly you down and have you join us on the conference. It'll be a great opportunity to get to know some of our business partners better. It was so memorable. And I ended up negotiating a lot with those partners that were on that business trip. And it was such a progressive idea. So not only was I living with my client, I was living with my client's customers, my client's partners. And to be so integrated, you can just do better legal work. And it's really also so interesting when you start dealing with outside law firms, because all of a sudden the shoe's on the other foot, and you know what you want, you know how to behave, you know how to give legal services differently. And even as a litigator, you know, as much as you miss it, you can spot inefficiencies, you can negotiate alternative fee arrangements really well. So this constant kind of putting the shoe on the other foot that occurs when you go in-house is really powerful, and it grows over time.
Yeah. And so you were at Xerox for just over 20 years, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So what was it like transitioning? You know, you've been with the company, you know them really well. You've been through transition periods with them, and then joining a new in-house environment. How did that transition go for you?
You know, it was fairly easy because IBM is quite analogous to Xerox. It's a global IT company. It's bigger. It's US controlled. There was a lot of acronyms at both places, so I was used to that. Honestly, I felt like there was, you know, doppelgangers in terms of personalities between the two companies, some alumni, but it was, there's always a tendency to think about how you've done things in the past. And for the first while, everyone was very interested in my experience, you know, from where I'd been, but it was a pretty easy transition. I'm a real people person. If you know Myers-Briggs, I'm an ESTJ. If you know Insights, I'm yellow blue. It was still COVID, right? So I'm a big fan of the walking meeting and a big fan of the coffee chat. So, you know, I just really went about meeting my people there, whether it was my team, the global legal community, the Canadian executive team, the clients. It didn't take long before I felt, you know, at home. And I remember the feeling when I started at Xerox, feeling a little fish out of water and what have I done? And, you know, my McCarthy's family, because I've been very lucky. I've worked for three organizations my entire career. They all have fantastic cultures, and there's sort of a work family that goes with all three. And each time the change agility got better, and each time, you know, it didn't take long to feel very comfortable in the new role. I was also very excited because things were bigger at IBM. I have a bigger team. You know, the legal and regulatory affairs department in Canada is integrated. We've got privacy, corporate security, government affairs. So I was very energized to be doing what I was doing before, but, you know, just on a different scale. So it was, the other thing that made it easy was just how busy it was. I happened to join at a time when IBM was doing an unprecedented transformation. We were spinning out a third of the company to a new co, which was about a third of the revenue, a third of the people, including a third of my team. I joined 10 days before the soft spin and about 3 months before the hard spin. It was still COVID. It was November. We had a busy year end with the remaining team. And then we had a major structural change in our management. So for my first 6 months, there was really no time to sort of feel like I was onboarding, because there was just so much to do to roll up the sleeves that it just happened very organically. I also had really nice handoff from the person from France who had been covering the role before I came. So and a great team, my own team, who was very mature and made it, easy for me to come in, and everybody just wanted to hit the ground running with me there. So that really helped as well.
Amazing. So Sasha, it's so clear that obviously you don't get to where you are today without taking different calculated or maybe sometimes not as calculated risks. And we would love to hear a little bit about one of the most significant risks you've taken in your career and what you learned from that experience.
Sure. That's for me, the biggest risk was the biggest reward. And it's probably the thing that makes me a little different than other general counsel, other in-house counsel. And that's that I ended up spending 5.5 years in the business in the middle of my 21 years at Xerox. So there was a bit of a culture of that happening, and there was talk about it for a long time. But I really felt like it was a bit of a double Dutch skipping rope. Like I was just, bobbing and weaving and waiting to jump into this idea. And I think I was trying to control it too much. I was looking at org charts. I was circling roles that I thought would be a great role. I was waiting for, a big case to finish. I was waiting for things to be stable at home. I was waiting for the moons and stars to align. This was about 10 years into my time at Xerox. And then this role came along, and I had a really supportive, GC. I had a really supportive CEO. It was a growth area. It was the same client that had taken me to Vegas that wanted me to come in and be the director of operations. And it was a newly created role. That's a bit of a theme. And I thought, okay, maybe I'm going to do one role and come back after 2 years, because that's what my manager had done before. She was GC. And the role was great. And I learned so much about operations. And then another created role came along that another guy had started, and he was retiring and he was about halfway through his roadmap. It was a workforce strategy role. And by workforce strategy, it was a business role that kind of transcends HR. It was all about productivity and engagement and contingent labor. It was fascinating because it kind of drew on my love of employment law. And instead of taking a blank slate role, I was actually taking a somewhat existing role and finishing someone else's roadmap. And I just loved that role. I was responsible for about 1,000 people who worked in the client sites for Xerox. Like think about a law firm where you have a print shop. Those are the people I was responsible for. And I used to go and visit the sites and try to figure out what was, what we were doing well and what we could do better. And I had a small team for that role. And then I was like, oh, I should phone the law society and find out how long it's actually safe for me to stay out of law. Is there a period of time after which I have to rewrite my bar ads? Because, gosh, I don't want to have to do that. And it turns out it's fairly nebulous as long as you're not going back into sole practice of 1 to 3 lawyers. So I thought, okay, I could do one more of these. And again, I was, I was tapped to do another role, and it was hard to leave the one I had, but my manager at the time said, sometimes the best time to leave a role is when you're on top and when your roadmap's roughly right, finished. And this third role was huge. It was very intimidating. It was to run our transition and service delivery team. So basically the project management office standing up the largest IT deals in Canada. I needed to, for example, fly to Ottawa once a month and meet with a CIO and do milestone meetings. I mean, this was completely out of my element. I also had P&L accountability. And that I felt that they were taking a big risk on me. My math degree probably, was pretty stale by then. So I said, look, I'll do this, but I would like some help. I'd like to take a course, a finance for non-financial executive course. And they said, of course. And how about we also give you a buddy in finance who, you can have access to throughout this role. And I'm so glad I did it because, you know, I've worked for sales companies in-house, and our customers, our business with our customers, our revenue work with our customers is our bread and butter work. And for me to get that close to customers and, you know, be accountable for standing up deals on time, on budget, to be accountable for customer satisfaction, it was so cumulative. And so it was, I mean, my life definitely was turned a little bit upside down. My days of working part-time came to an end because that was not practical in the business roles. But it came at the right time in terms of my kids' ages. And I just so recommend it to any lawyer, whether it's, you know, something less quantum, like doing cross-functional projects. But if you're working somewhere and you have an opportunity to, you know, to go off the tracks into the business, whether it's a one-way trip or a round trip, I so recommend it. It's been a real differentiator for me. It's allowed me to think differently. And I think it helped me, you know, when it came to changing roles, and it will help me hopefully in future when I do the next thing.
Thank you very much for sharing all of that wisdom, Sasha. And I really appreciated the visual of a one-way or round trip ticket. And love how that ties in with our off the tracks theme. So definitely going to steal that again in the future. But we would like to touch on something you just mentioned briefly a bit more. We know that you have in the past negotiated some flexible work arrangements, and we would love to know a bit more about how you were able to negotiate these work arrangements and any advice you may have for lawyers looking to do the same.
Sure, I'd be delighted. There's been two parts one. The first one is truly part-time. The second one's really more I would call flexible. So that the first one was when my kids were young, and not when they were babies. For me, it was more when they were, my daughters are about 18 months apart. So this is when they were in the K to six zone. And that's when I was really feeling I was never in the schoolyard. They weren't hosting lunch dates. There was field trips and this and that. And so I approached, and as I mentioned before, Xerox was, you know, very family friendly. And so I approached them and I said, how would you feel if I took Wednesdays off? I'm not looking for long weekends. I'm looking for a day where I can really be, you know, more active as a mom, but also, you know, get a lot of things done. So I'm not just running errands on the weekend instead of being with my kids then either. Obviously, if there's something really critical that happens on a particular Wednesday, I'm there. But otherwise, I'd like to do that. And then I got brave and I said, and I'm hoping you'll agree that it's nonlinear because you're going to get way more than 80% out of me. And they were fair about it. And that worked for so many years. And, you know, to this day, you know, my kids, I keep a couple of those Mother's Day cards, and it's like, or Thanksgiving, I am thankful for Wednesdays, right? So, and I know for my kids, like the difference between 0 days and 1 day was so much different than say, you know, 1 days and 2 days, right? So they really felt like they had, you know, and my relationships with, you know, I still have a book club with a lot of the other moms I met during those years, and that probably wouldn't be the case if I hadn't immersed myself a little bit more. And Tuesday nights felt like Friday nights. It was great. It was very good for work-life balance, for mental health. It weaned. And sometimes we can be very lucky with timing because it was literally around middle school time that I was going into those business roles, and I realized it was much in law. It's easy enough to say, hey, I can see you Thursday or Friday. It was like no one had to wait till the next week. But in when you're in the business, there's so many governance meetings that to say my calendar is blocked every Wednesday wasn't practical. So again, it was just lucky timing. So the second part of my flexible work is more around flexible than part-time. And it came after my kids were a little older and I finished my business roles. And this was a time in my career where, as many would experience, the longer you work at a place, the more holidays you accumulate. And so floater days, and I was finding it very hard marrying that with increasingly senior roles to actually take all my holidays. And you know, I'm the first to say take them early, take long weekends, you know, but I was still not taking all my holidays. At the same time, I love sports. I've hung up my hockey skates and my soccer cleats, but I still really, really love tennis, and I am trying to be competitive at it. And where I play has a lot of teams that play competitive against other clubs, but the best tennis was always during the day. And I just thought, wait a second, if my employer is up for this, I could chew through a lot of my holidays going to practices and going to matches, and just make sure all my stakeholders knew that I was off grid for a couple hours, certain times of year, certain days. And it was a win-win-win, because I didn't need any coverage for those days, and I got to take my holidays, and I stayed healthy and happy. And it's just worked so well. So, you know, what that said to me is, and both Xerox and IBM have been so supportive of my request, and my team all knows about it. And I would just say there's no one size fits all. It's, you know, especially in this time of difficulty disconnecting, we have to look at different ways to disconnect. And so for me, you know, while I don't have that, you know, Tuesday is the new Friday anymore, I do very much look forward to the days where I know I can, you know, get outside and blow off some steam midday. So.
That's amazing, Sasha. And I think it's such a great example of how, like, flexibility boosts employee morale, because exactly what you're describing, it definitely, like, positively impacted not only your family, those Mother's Day cards with our favorite part is Wednesdays, that's just so sweet, but also just, you know, your ability to go and play tennis in the middle of the day makes you, like, happier and healthier and probably more productive and more creative when you come to work. And so I really appreciate you sharing that perspective, because I know that, you know, I really feel, and I said this recently to people at work, I feel like this topic about flexible work arrangements has become really divisive. And it's become divisive, like, through the ins and outs of, like, pandemic work culture. And I think that just showing that, you know, you've had flexibility in your roles built in pre-pandemic, like, quite pre-pandemic. And I think that just shows that employers who are willing to make those flexible arrangements will retain top talent and have really happy employees. So I think that's just such a great perspective, and I really appreciate you sharing that with us. And so we were kind of talking a little bit about mental health and, you know, maintaining mental wellness, and you talked a bit about tennis, but you shared with us earlier a really neat acronym that you use when thinking about your mental health. And I'm wondering if you could share a bit about that acronym and how you implement it with us.
Sure, be happy to. And I have to give credit to where this acronym came from. At Xerox, we had an employee caucus group called the Women's Alliance, and we used to have annual seminars. And I learned about BOATS, B-O-A-T-S, at one of those Women's Alliance conferences. And I've carried it with me for, you know, 15 plus years. So let me go through it for you. B is bundling. And bundling is not multitasking. They're very different things. Bundling is doing multiple things together that are synergistic. And you know, my favorite example of that is a walking meeting, because you get your exercise and your vitamin D, and you get an interaction, whether it's a business walking meeting or catching up with a friend at the same time. So that's bundling. O is outsourcing. And that is just simply, and again, I think it's a win-win. Hiring people to do things, it's good for them because it employs them, and it takes something off your plate when you're a very busy person. The third one is alternating. And I'll give a couple of work examples. So obviously now the alternating between working in the office and working at home and having different days for different things. Or maybe, and this would apply not just to in-house, having meeting days and then quiet days where you get to do your drafting or your presentations. But I also think of alternating in terms of travel. So I know when I travel, I love to do a couple of days in a busy urban city. I'm thinking about after Barad's travel, right? So, you know, running around Paris with the traffic and then, you know, getting out of Paris and being in the countryside and the vineyards for a couple of days and like, okay, that was nice, but now I want a city again. I better get on a train and go to Barcelona. So alternating has many applications. The fourth one, T, is technology. And it's so funny because when I took the course, they were talking about e-banking, like it was a big deal. But now I think, okay, you know, we're one of the things we're doing a lot of at IBM is thinking about AI and automation, right? So you think about something that you're doing that's repeatable, reusable, and automation doesn't necessarily have to mean computer programming. So, you know, just creating repeatable, reusable tools, it can be just a very quick go do, and that gives a lot of time back. And it's a bit, we can talk about the email project maybe, but for me, I'm all about like, how do we get an hour back every day? How do we stop, start, continue things that are sucking our productivity? The last thing after that little digression is S, or simplify. For me, that's been the most impactful, and that is that stop, start, continue I was talking about in work. I think we have to let so much air is going into our balloons at work and in our personal lives, and we have to be really deliberate to let air out whenever we can. And that can be, you know, that can be a report that you're doing that nobody's reading. So you'll do it less frequently or not at all. But it can also be, is there someone in your life that's sucking energy from you? You know, do you need to change that relationship, you know, or wean away from that relationship a little bit? So simplify is for me, you know, they're all important, but that's the one that's been very important to me.
And I don't know if this is intentional, but just thinking of the acronym BOATS, it just makes me think of like, I don't know, I guess you could have a boat in choppy water, but boat to me, when I think of that, it's just like, okay, a nice boat on a calm body of water. It's going to keep you afloat instead of drowning if you stick to these principles. So thank you for sharing that. But we would love to know a bit more about the email project that you mentioned.
Thanks for asking about that. I'm pretty passionate about that project. And I can give a bit of background. Xerox is a Lean Six Sigma shop. IBM is design thinking. You may have heard of Agile. These are all methodologies that are designed to create better productivity in the workplace, whether it's waste or whether it's removing errors. So the example they always give is at Starbucks, where the lineup at the cash is short and the lineup at the barista is long, and when your coffee's too cold or too hot. So that's sort of in a nutshell, you know, what it is. And it's a very deliberate methodology. So, and at Xerox, every employee became Yellow Belt certified. And then they encouraged some of the professionals and leaders to become Green Belt certified. There is a Black Belt, which I didn't do, but for Green Belt, you needed to study more, write exams, and then run a project of your own. And I decided to do a non-legal project. Some members of the legal team had already kind of picked a lot of the low-hanging fruit, like outside counsel. And this was at a time when we had BBMs instead of texts, but everything else was pretty much the same. And I decided to do a project on email productivity and try to figure out how we could deploy some policies and practices and best practices to reduce the churn of email. I ended up meeting and working with a really fabulous professor from Rotman who was very generous with her time, and I used some of her data. And the project was called Take Back the Hour. And the theory was that if it had a flywheel effect and the entire organization had good hygiene around email, which was, you know, stop replying to all and, you know, these types of things, you could actually gain, everybody could gain an hour back. And we looked at payroll data and how many employees we had. And we figured in, you know, somewhere between initially four and ultimately $44 million in paid time could be redirected towards revenue generating work, legal work, innovation, wellness. And so the, you know, the whole idea with the project was how do we give everyone an hour back? So we've dusted that off and redeployed it many times. We've done a second iteration of it on Meeting Credo. It's just something I'm very proud of. And as I said, other than thinking about things like respecting global time zones, because we, our business has become so much more globalized and moving from BBMs to, you know, WhatsApp, the rest of it has really just been the same enduring first principles since the project was done in, you know, around 2005, 2006.
That's so interesting, Sasha, because I think like we live in this, I was just having this conversation, like a similar conversation with a friend yesterday, like we live in this very instantaneous world. And so I feel like when I get an email and I don't respond instantly, I start to feel anxiety that someone's going to think, oh, like Piper's not working, like she's not doing her job. And then I think, then I like challenge myself and I think, but okay, like, will anyone die if I don't send this email today or in the next 5 minutes? And so it's like, I feel like I'm at this constant, like having this constant internal battle of where I'm like getting distracted by like the instantaneous nature of our world. But then I'm also like, oh, well, you know, this is just the way it is. So it's something that I'm still definitely working on. And I would love to, you know, I definitely need to learn more about this email project because I definitely don't have email wellness in my life. And I know that might sound silly, but I feel at times that my life is just run by email and not in a good way.
Yeah, no, I hear you. You know, one of the most interesting things each time I've had the opportunity to study this or, you know, get the voice of the employee on this, it's so interesting what I hear, and now with COVID and then the right to disconnect laws coming out, one, you know, people sort of jump to the panacea, and you know, say we want an email moratorium and everyone's going to use delayed send. And I remember talking to, you know, surveys are so good in terms of, you know, running these types of studies and productivity initiatives. And someone said, please don't do that. I'm an early bird. I love getting up at 5 a.m. and clearing my email, and then I can walk my kids to school, or then I can go to the gym. And then when I walk into the office, the pot's not boiling over. And so what was really important was to recognize, I think, everybody's unique work styles. And again, it ties back to what we were saying before. I'm all about output. And you know, I also learned, as you know, one of the best things I learned working in the business was being a manager, not just of people, multi-layered teams and departments. The longer a leash you give people, the more trust you get back. And so when people know that it's about output, then they feel confident to do what they need to do. And they feel fine about, you know, opening up their laptop after dinner. I mean, we're all professionals. We're not 9-to-5ers. And when work can feel good because you're passionate about what you're doing, you don't resent that because you also had that latitude during the day to do what you needed to do. So I think it's about the relationship you have. And I, you know, what I always say to people, including when I go on holidays and disconnect, and again, it gets hard to completely disconnect in a role like this. I think about it as a pyramid, right? So it starts with an email, and then it goes from, you know, like an email just to you with a flag, and then it goes to a text or a Slack if that's your venue, and then it goes to a phone call. And I, you know, I just say if it's really important, you know, let me know that, because I don't think most people assume that emails have 1 hour service levels or 3 hour service levels. I mean, that's just, I don't know how we would function that way, right? So it's also just about having standing understandings with the people you interact with, how to get a hold of you if they really need you. And so when you have a good relationship with your team, your clients, your executive team, your global colleagues, people know. people know how to get to, and they know that you're not constantly looking. You're reminding me of something else. A lot of what I try to do is look for quick wins because we don't have time to do massive projects. And I remember a weekend, quarter ends are very busy in sales companies. And I remember a weekend where a lot of people were watching for a draft to come in. And at the end of the weekend, there were a lot of upset people because the draft never came in and they spent their whole weekend watching their phones. And I said, wait a second, why isn't the person who's being paid commission on this deal watching for the draft to come in, and then they can use a phone tree and everyone else who's on the deal can just enjoy their weekend? Are we all okay if, you know, from here on in, we use that method? And it was a 5-minute conversation for the entire team to buy in on that. And then we solved this issue of having an unnecessary number of people, you know, watching for a draft that might or might not even come in over the weekend.
No, that's so astute. And I appreciate this sort of mini lesson on email wellness and building relationships within your team and trust. I think that no matter what role anybody works in, all of those lessons are so applicable and transferable. And I know that tonight when I open my email, I might have a new perspective. Sasha, we genuinely feel like we could talk to you for hours. And there is so much goodness in all of the stories you have to share. But we always love to end our episodes with the same question to every guest, which is, what is something new that you've learned recently?
Well, I'm going to answer it in two parts, if that's okay. If this is the last question, because I did want to leave you with that gift we talked about earlier. I learned about a really cool tool called Trello and the power of crowdsourcing. A couple of us at IBM in the legal department had a global coffee chat, and we just got talking about common issues, and we realized that we were all spending a lot of time onboarding new lawyers, and that it wasn't a great onboarding experience for the people because it was all kind of bespoke, and it was taking up a lot of management time. And I had seen this tool called Trello, which is like an electronic bulletin board, where you literally just, you can pull anything into it, including artwork. And I said, how about we get back together once a week, and we just build something for new lawyers in the company? And we kept going, and we had lots of executive sponsorship. And a couple months later, we launched the tool. It's everything from how to submit your first expense report to our major agreement templates with annotations. And it's now got close to 300 members and contributors. So that was something I learned because, again, I've been in a lot of roles where projects are formal, they have milestones, you have investment cases. And again, this was just the power of, we can solve problems at the grassroots level. You don't have to ask for permission. Just get going and then take executives across it when you're ready to launch. So that was my work learning. I think I told you at the beginning, when I'm not practicing law, I love sports. I love photography. I love music and playlists, and I love mixology. So I did promise you a cocktail recipe. I get together with my law school girlfriends quite often. We're still a really tight group, and some of us actually get together to snowshoe about halfway between Ottawa and Toronto at least once a year. And so this recipe is called The Justice because it came from my friend who is at the Department of Justice. It's a little less than 1 ounce of Saint Germain, a little more than 1 ounce of fresh lime juice, some simple syrup, and I recommend demerara sugar if you have that, and then pour it over ice and top with Prosecco. So if you if you're having a dry month, you can use SodaStream and maybe just an elderflower drink that is not Saint Germain. So both versions, I hope you guys enjoy.
This is a first. This is a first for Off the Tracks podcast, and we are excited. Erin, are you looking for a signature cocktail for your wedding? Because this
I know this might be it. I love it. I'm excited to try the Justice.
Sasha, that's so fun. Erin and I are going to write this down. We'll definitely, you know, put it in the episode notes in case anyone is looking for something to try after listening to an episode of Off the Tracks. We're just so thrilled. Sasha, thank you for sharing all of your insights with us today. It has been a joy to learn from you. We are so glad that we got connected in this way. And we're so happy that you've joined us as part of the in-house series, learning from your experiences and learning about getting involved in the business specifically was just so rich and so insightful and such a different perspective. And we're so, so grateful you came and shared that with us. So thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it's been a delight. Thanks so much for having me and great meeting both of you.
Thank you again to our partner, Lawyers in House, a law firm composed of former in-house counsel. To learn more, visit lawyersinhouse.com to see how they can provide insightful, pragmatic, and solutions-focused legal services to you and your legal department.